This is a special edition of the Mimiverse podcast. It was recorded in Fargo, North Dakota during ValleyCon, the Fargo Entertainment Expo, which had its 37th incarnation over the weekend of October 21st through 23rd, 2011. The Mimiverse hosted its own panel with 7 panelists and 15 guest listeners entitled Movie Making on a Budget. We hope you enjoy it.
Actually recording right now, so Chris, you can take it away. Introduce us all. Obviously, you know how that works.
Hi, the four of you.
Welcome. This is a great crowd here
to
in Fargo.
Our very intimate panel about how to make movies for cheap, why you should make movies for cheap, and why I make movies, and why I am cheap. Starting out, we'll introduce our large panel, which outnumbers the audience.
So far. Because we so rule.
Because we're awesome.
Large in number,
and we love
not
to hear ourselves
size.
Talk. On the end there, we have Anthony Kaiser.
Yay.
And everybody on this panel has appeared in the films somewhere or has been involved in the making of them. We've added another person.
Yay, it's fine. Yay.
We're almost equal.
We're almost equal.
Oh, someone else is watching purposefully.
Oh, we got more.
Yay.
Join us.
One of us.
One of us.
So down here we have Anthony on the end. This is Sid Corpy. She's a star of Attack the Moon Zombies.
Yeah.
And was kind enough to, these two are married and are kind enough to let us use their house as a location for our newest
awesome
film, House of Ghosts. Next to me is a girl I've never met.
Who is
that strange person?
She's just a groupie.
Yeah.
I totally picked her up somewhere.
He liked the spider in her hair.
Okay, this is Shannon McDonough, the starlet of the Mimiverse, as it were. I am Christopher R. Mim. I'm the writer, director, editor, and all-around crazy guy behind the films.
Don't forget the guy behind me, the
creepy guy who's not going to say much but make you uncomfortable, is my good friend, Rylan Bachman. He is also the master fundraiser for our film.
He was an executive producer. He's also like the guy who thinks of all the smart marketing things.
Esperanto.
The crazy crap we come up with probably can be traced to this guy.
That guy.
And he's someone that would be in this audience auditorium even if we weren't here.
Next to me is Ruby. She has many names.
I do, but you can call me Ruby.
And she is the lighting designer on my films. She also helped me build sets on a couple of them. And is pretty much all around my tech person who does the stuff I don't know how to do.
The queen of cool shadow making.
Yes.
None of you guys got this. Okay.
And this guy in the end is our audio master and sometime actor, sometime set guy, sometime
and
jack of all trades.
Producer,
Mark Hader. You can call him Hader. And he won't be offended.
And watch his eyes, because he tells a lot with those
eyes.
Big eye actor.
To begin, we'll start with, I'm going to ask you guys, who here has the impetus to make their own films? One, two, everyone
half
but
the
this
audience.
Guy.
And who has the money to make your own films?
Okay, the one guy who doesn't.
Other people in the audience, you guys all get together and you can pay
them. Hey, you want to invest in a movie?
Yeah. We're always
talk about
for
that associate producership. Yes.
So, a little quick background on why and how and what I got started. In 2005, I wanted to make a movie. I've always just wanted to make a movie, like a lot of people you probably know and some of yourselves. I just really wanted to make a movie. So I kind of just did it. I started writing a script, and I started making The Monster of Phantom Lake, which is available on the website for you podcast people, and to you guys right over there.
Here, special price at Fargo.
And it's, I make cheesy 1950s style B-movies, and I do it on purpose because I love them. And it's something I know I can do. And as I was telling Sid earlier, I've tried really hard to write good scripts, and they just come out like bad 1950s B-movies. So I'm just doing what I know how to do, admittedly. So I started doing that, and everything I've done, I pretty much figured out along the way. I did take some audio courses at one point. I am a certified audio engineer, which got me nothing.
Which means
the sound of my movies is pretty dang good.
It really is good.
Everything else was just sort of me making it up as I went along.
Till we open our mouths. Anyway.
Right.
Well, and taking the time to self-edit. I mean, he learned a lot in the first movie. I was involved in the first movie, although we were friends. And you look at it and you go, yes, there are things you could do better. But he did a great job for what he had and what he knew. And every movie gets a little bit better on the acting and the editing and all that other stuff.
Wow, the editing. Shannon is texting.
Oh, Shannon.
You are a star.
I'm tweeting.
Oh, my God. Even. Wow.
All right.
That's not our microphone.
Yes.
You're doing that on purpose?
Off-boat sailing or what?
Sailor man over there.
All hail. All right. All praise be the guys. All right. Hey.
We now hate the Manticorians.
No, we do not.
They're not going to listen to this.
They're not going to listen to this. And if they do, we mean it. So we started making movies in 2005. So what I'm going to tell you first off is how to come across a camera real cheap. Because cameras will tend to be, if you buy a camera to make a movie, it's going to be your probably biggest investment right out the gate. And what you want to do is, if you are making films as opposed to, you know, YouTube videos, which you can film with your camera phone, or even your pocket camera, you're going to want a camera that can handle 24 frames a second. Do you guys know what that is and why? Okay, I don't need to explain it. I like that.
I don't know.
I don't know you, either.
I don't know, and I'll be listening to this
podcast.
Okay,
so I have to explain to these guys and to our podcast audience.
Your own crew.
Film, as you see it in a movie, Hollywood movie, runs at 24 frames a second.
Huh.
Video runs at 30 or 60, depending on if it's interlaced or not, but that's not important. That's what gives you that sort of magic filmic quality and how things look different between someone's video camera, an old VHS, you know, bazooka cam.
Right.
And, you know, shoulder-mounted super cam. And film, which is run at 24 frames. That's it.
Oh,
now,
I learned something today.
That's a secret you just gave away.
That is not really a secret. I wasn't hiding it or anything.
He didn't invent it.
Thank you for sharing that, O Keeper of Knowledge.
You're welcome. The other thing, though, is that should be known, is that video, by its very nature, cannot do 24 frames a second, at least not before the advent of HD. It only ran at 30 frames a second.
God, I hate HD.
So the way they made it work so that you could do digital video in 24 frames a second is some really complex mathematical algorithm to turn 30 frames into 24. Because they're both, you know, divisible by 6. That was it. That's really the complicated algorithm, is they figured out a way to do that. So anyway, when choosing a camera, find something that runs at 24 frames a second if you want to make something that looks like a movie and not something that looks like, you know,
a home movie.
Right. There are a lot of cameras out there now that can do this, especially digital cameras, that are not very expensive. But of course, then you have to start getting things like resolution. If you're going with HD, you're going to spend more money. If you're going to go with standard definition, you're going to spend less. But you have to ask yourself, when I make this movie, where do I want to release it? How do I want to present it to the masses? Do I want to just put it on DVD? Well, DVDs are standard definition. Maybe you don't need that HD camera. If you're planning on showing it at movie theaters, HD might be the way to go. If you're planning on putting it on the internet, you may not even need an expensive 24 frames a second digital video camera. A home movie camera might be all you need if you're doing YouTube videos or something. So, think about that when buying a camera. I personally use the Panasonic line of cameras because, as far as I'm concerned, for the price point, which is the standard definition one goes for about $2,000 if you're gonna buy it, and the HD one goes for about $3,000. For your money, you are going to get the absolute best picture quality, the most filmic looking of all of them, and really good sound that's already built into the camera. So you won't have to do that separately if you don't want to.
Is filmic a word?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
cool.
It is.
We have a question for the,
yes,
audience.
The audience.
Not so much.
He wants to know if Chris has been tempted by the DSLR bug.
Yes, I have.
Yes.
Yes. Not so much. I know
I'm
you
the
get
the voice of the computer.
Yes.
I just repeat whatever the
you
computer
just repeat
says.
Whatever you say. Not so much. I know with that you can get really great depth of field. Yeah, and
with
you can do a lot
lenses.
Of stuff. It's still kind of problematic because they don't have a really good prosumer camera that's available that works as a video camera. Right now, the DSLR cameras generally are still handheld, you know, still photo cameras. And they do video, but a lot of times they only do it for 5 to 10 minutes. That's all you can get. How long is the scene? True, but a lot of times that's just, you're limiting yourself in a way that's going to add headaches that you don't necessarily want. Me personally, I actually like I said, I use the Panasonic cameras, and the one I have now, which is the HMC 150, records onto a high-density SD card, which I have 132-gigabyte SD card that gets you about 3.5 hours of full 1080p HD video. For me, that's all I need.
Quite technical. Very technical.
And actually, this will speak a little to Ruby, is that one of the things about DSLR compared to the three CCD cameras, which are the chip, you know, three chip cameras, that the Panasonic ones are, is low light response tends to be kind of crappy. But when you're shooting movies, if you have a good lighting designer, low light response is not a problem. So if
Ruby
I can give
is available
you,
to you all.
Yeah. At a low fee. I work cheap.
So it's sort of important to note that when you're shooting live things, right, like a concert in a very dark, you know, concert hall or a bar or something, low light response is going to be an issue and a problem. If you're doing narrative film where you're doing takes of things and you're setting lights and stuff, you really don't need to worry about it if you light it properly. So you just got to find a nice, good lighting designer who understands what they're doing, and it's not as much of an issue. And for me, one of the reasons I really like some of the for one, it's cheaper. I mean, you know, the three CCD cameras are cheaper on average right now. 5 years, it might be different. But you get is you get more that, again, that sort of the camera I have has built-in gamma curves and a bunch of great stuff to add that sort of soft filmic look and feel that you're. With a DSLR, you're going to have to do yourself. At least right now, like I said, there really isn't something out right now that works in the same way. But I haven't really jumped on it yet, no. And I just bought the new camera, so I'm going to run that into the ground before I start looking into something else.
What he's not telling you, though, is he only went HD to torment all of us who have wrinkles.
Yes.
HD.
That's what they say.
Yes.
However, I can say his old camera did take a bounce when we were doing when I was trying to set it up on the thing, and it still works. He said,
"Yeah, Anthony dropped my camera
on accident. On accident,
it still won't be in the moment.
That's why he has a new camera.
Yeah,
Chris about had a heart attack.
Broken.
That's actually one thing that works nice between me and Chris is that on a Hollywood kind of movie, usually the lighting designer also knows the most about the camera. They're called director of photography. But in our case, I know lighting, and that's pretty much it. I know not to touch the soundboard. I understand that the actors do some stuff, and I should point lights at them so that the camera can see their pretty faces.
And if you check
but,
the website...
Chris knows a ton about the camera, and like I said, I've known him forever, but our collaboration professionally just started 2 movies ago. And so, you know, I don't know what the camera sees. And so frequently, I'll be like, scoot over, I need to see what it's seeing. How much can you see? What do I have to light? Because you're lighting, like, something about the size of that rack most times. Maybe 6 foot wide, maybe 10 foot wide, depending on how far back he sees. But you have to take into account how much the camera can see, what it's in focus, what he's going for. because frequently, you know, it's right a close-up, literally chin to top of head. Sometimes it's the entire hallway and it's 25 feet long. So it takes different things, and it depends on what the camera sees and how much light it sees, because frequently I'll think, good God, this is supposed to be something that's really, really dark and moody. Look at all these darn lights that are on. I got, you know, 7 lights at 150 watts. I got a 20 watt, you know, 40 watt up in the ceiling, a house light. And you're asking me to put a 100 watt floodlight on someone. Really? Really, do you need it? But then I look at the camera and go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get it.
You know, sometimes just a little tiny 20 watt lamp will give just enough boost on the face where it doesn't look weird anymore.
Well, and two, to speak to the lighting and using those three CCD cameras, again, their low light response is kind of crappy, so you end up over lighting a lot of times, and it'll look great on the camera. In real life, it's like, good Lord, turn it off, right. It burns.
And that's one big difference. I came from theater and dance, and what we see on the stage is so very different from what the camera sees and what you're looking for in a camera response. So I'm learning a little bit about the camera, just enough not to know what CCD means.
And I was going to say for...
Honestly, for the question was, do I storyboard? The answer is no. Being that I also write my own films, that gives me a certain mental storyboard as I'm writing of how I imagine it. But one of the things I do, and this is sort of a plus of making these cheesy old movies, is, and I've told every actor this, I say, look, any one shot, you get 2 takes. That's it. You don't get it, you don't get it. So I do a lot of coverage, but I end up moving very, very quickly. And what it also, as an editor, allows me to do is I sort of just have to take what I get, you know? And being that I'm making these cheesy old movies, back then they didn't have a lot of money to spend on, you know, getting coverage of everything, right?
I make you do it again sometimes.
Well, sometimes, if you absolutely suck it.
I like that middle.
For me, I just sort of, as an editor, I actually kind of think it's fun to piece it together in the editing room. Sort of putting that puzzle together and seeing what I end up with. Again, I think it also adds to the charm of my films that I don't always get exactly what I want. And sometimes the best thing I get isn't the best thing I could have gotten. But for this cheesy thing, maybe it becomes a joke because, you know, the skeleton looks awful or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he is referring only to non-human acting things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
actors,
he always I've gets never gotten a bad performance
from his players.
Ever.
There's just no way to not get perfectionism.
I do, but then again, it does give me the benefit of, like Ryland was saying behind me, that I do get the benefit of then doing lots of multiple camera angles and having a lot of choices. And a lot of times, you know, my movies tend to come together more in the editing room than anything else. And then also with the storyboards, that's just more work. I don't want to do that. I want to shoot the movie and make it. And I put one out a year, so I really, you know, to keep that pace, I don't even have time for stuff. So. Yes.
It would be very important if there was a large production team with multiple inputs, but not meant as an insult to Chris at all, because it's his movie. It's his vision. And you know what? As long as he can explain it to me what he wants, or say, nah, more like this thing, and put a picture in my head, then it's fine. But luckily, we can read each other's brains. And you're not always that lucky. That's why storyboards are great.
Well, and that's just it. On all my movies, my crews are usually 1, 2, 3 people, maybe.
At the most.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. And again, there is a bit of a guerrilla filmmaking sort of behind it, of just like, shoot it and make it work.
It's very much so the style, just that simplistic 50s style.
I mean,
you don't get overcomplicated because you have your main shots.
Well, and that gives me a bit of an advantage in doing that style. Is that
you don't have cranes.
Yeah, I can make mistakes. I can make I can make stupid choices that maybe won't work, or they might. You know, it gives me a certain level of freedom to be able to do things in that genre that I could never get away with if I were trying to make like a really hardcore, you know, sci-fi modern movie. I couldn't do it. Questions are good.
So have you gotten to a point where you actually like go keep shooting permits or are you still going to keep an eye on?
Well, actually, this is one of the
shooting permits and all that.
One of the things that I was going to say, and this is one way to keep your costs down, if you're a screenwriter or if you're looking at scripts and you want to shoot something, is choose or write scripts based around what you have. that ends up saving you a hell of a lot of time, headaches, and money. One of the things, like my first three films, I wrote that they take place in the woods because I had access to this guy's backyard who just said, hey, whatever, do what you want. You can even plug into our garage for power. Awesome. And so I wrote the scripts around that, knowing that's shooting in these guys' house over here. Well, they have a nice old house in South Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. We actually had Chris, we showed him when we first met him, and we said our third floor is like a 50s mall shop, so we had him over to say, you know, you kind of shoot in the 50s. So then instead he decides to shoot the whole house and skip
the
third
floor. Great old classic house, and I thought, well, I need something to shoot, or I need a new movie. What about a ghost story in a haunted house kind of a thing? And I knew I had access to it, and they had offered previously. R2's here. R2 is here.
Well, and there was the Imperial March ring ring.
Yeah.
And that's the message.
And plus,
message
it brings food.
Yeah.
Yes.
So one of the things that I sort of suggest to screenwriters, and like I said, if you're looking at other scripts, is if you can find or write scripts based around locations or even people you know or have access to or locations, if you have a great, you know, if you have a cabin somewhere, write something that takes place in a cabin, you know? If you know someone who has farmland, write something like that. Unless you have a very specific vision of something, then you're going to end up spending more money and trying to get permits and stuff. The other thing, too, and I'll get to her question in a second. The other thing, too, is that a lot of places and a lot of people like the idea of being featured or having their stuff featured in movies.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times, it just can't hurt to ask, hey, I really like your front yard. Can I use your house? A lot of times we're like,
it works.
Sure.
It really does.
Just because it's cool. It's different. Not a lot of people. And people love the movies, you know?
And especially if you're not there for a long time. I mean, your first movie will take longer to put together than you can ever imagine. But, you know, but as long as you have, you know, a little bit of wiggle room in there and you're like, okay, I'm pretty sure I can get these three scenes done over the long Labor Day weekend. You know, then you're not imposing on them too much.
Right.
And, you know, there until 10 and 12 and 13 o'clock.
And just be, you know, respectful of other people's stuff. And, you know, why wouldn't you be? You know?
What time
are you
going to
start doing that at our house then?
Half of 26 o'clock.
No. Oh. You're friends now. I have no respect.
I was going to mention, as far as permits you're mentioning, we had in his filming now, it's like there's going to be art on the wall, so you have to get releases from the artists that their things. So we did do releases, and they said, hey, I have some other stuff that I could add to that. So, I mean, that's where people are saying,
again,
bring,
I mean,
you know, bring it up.
They offered their own art.
Yeah,
right.
And, you know, like anything, especially when you're working with, like, artists like that, a lot of times they're going to want to get their stuff featured and seen, you know? If you're an artist, you generally want your stuff to be seen. So a lot of times, just ask people, and a lot of times they'll offer it and just say, yeah, sure, no problem.
For the price of a credit in the end,
yeah,
which
give
is
them
there
credit.
Forever.
Give them thanks.
Yeah.
Our dog groomer is grooming our dogs for the movie for free for an associate producer credit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
True story.
Very cool. Do you ever get ideas for scripts?
Yeah, and a lot of times...
Do you get ideas for scripts from the cast?
And you know, lately, as I've been doing more of these, I'm getting a little more collaborative.
I mentioned despot before, didn't I?
I will freely admit to being a huge egomaniac when it comes to this thing. It's my vision.
It is his vision.
But no, I mean,
word.
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Except for me, you changed the line for me once.
I sometimes do take suggestions, and too, like, if people have good ideas, it's stupid not to listen. I mean, especially if it's a really good idea, because then you can claim it as your own later.
Or you can film it and see how it ends up, and then if it's better, that's super.
Well, that's the thing with getting coverage like that. It's like, and that's the old thing, is that when people have ideas, like, yeah, we'll do that. But let's also do it my way, and we'll see which one is better. And then if you're editing it or whatever, you'd be like, yeah, throw that out. We'll use mine. You know? Humor everyone is what I'm saying.
Throwing something out there is Chris, I had mentioned in Attack of the Moon Zombies, is they call Ripley, you know, a name. And so he had a name, you know, just a pet name for his wife. So Chris was part of the husband. And so he was going to use this pet name, and I just sent an email saying, why don't you sneak in Sweet Pea instead of whatever it was? And he did. He used that.
Because
and
it's
just,
what he
and
torments me with. Oh, yeah, isn't that
there
sweet?
It is.
So, I didn't know that.
So
thank God these floors are concrete.
Now it won't go away.
So I guess to move forward. So again, you know, find a good camera that works for you. That's in your price range. You can always rent cameras too, which is
or lights.
It's yeah, and I mean they're hard to find. If you're planning on making movies, you know, invest in it. You know, I mean it's not that bad. If you can't afford it, you could probably find someone who has a camera that wants to use it and wants to help.
Yeah, Craigslist.
Yeah, something to be said about cameras. Since that's the main thing with making movies, because people are watching the films, it's a lot like audio. When you do audio, you want to invest all your money in your microphones. The same thing for films. You really, really, really want to put as much money as you can into your camera to try to get the best camera for your dollar.
And it'll last you for years.
Don't skimp on cameras. That analogy works for audio too. So.
And again, to sort of speak to that is that, you know, we're talking about making movies on a budget. Be realistic about what it is you want to do as a filmmaker, how you want to present it, how you want to put out your film. If you're making a film, you're making a short, do some research into your audience even. Because you as the filmmaker is going to be your biggest advocate for whatever piece of art you're creating. And no matter how much you can get a gang of cool people to come hang out at you at a convention, really it ends up you're going to be the biggest advocate for your own work, because it's your work ultimately. So be realistic in what you're doing and figure out what you want to do before you do it, and then you're gonna end up saving money in the long run, because you're not like, I'm gonna make a movie and I'm gonna make it on film, dang it, I'm gonna do it on film, and then you realize, wow, I could have just done this on video.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, think it through before you go. Now Mark mentioned audio, and this is another thing that is very, very important to any filmmaker that I tell everybody. Like I said before, I'm a certified audio engineer. And when I was going to college for that, one of the things is I took an audio for video class. And the first thing the instructor told me has stuck with me all this time and is very, very important. When you see a movie, if it looks like crap, you might think to yourself, wow, this is a stylistic choice, okay? And you'll fight through the movie. However it looks, you can do that. If you watch a movie and it sounds horrible, you'll give it 10 minutes, get frustrated and annoyed, and turn it off or leave. Audio is one of those things that people don't think about when you're making a movie, because it's a visual medium ultimately, but sound is really the most important thing. We're in a room full of people talking, you know, over each other, and it's kind of annoying, right?
I'm trying to turn it off.
But when you hear the podcast, this is less. You'll be able to hear us more.
Yeah, so re-listen. But audio is one of the most important things that people don't realize when they're making movies. If you can't do it yourself, find someone who can. And again, there's a lot of people out there that have the skills, have the equipment, they want to use it, and a lot of times they'll volunteer or be very cheap, especially when you're making indie films. And if someone is going to charge you a lot of money, find someone else.
Well, and if I may.
Unless you got the money to spend and they're worth it.
Yeah.
Just check their resume.
And if I may, even if there's not a lot of resources in a town like Fargo-Moorhead, there's colleges. And there's always someone who needs a final project.
Yeah.
There's always someone who needs to write a thesis. There's always someone who's in a film production class. They want to edit, but they don't write. They don't have any desire to write. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't want to spend the time. They really want to edit. You know what? I want to write. I'm not interested in editing. Let's team up. Just, you know, Craigslist it out there early, because they know what they're... I mean, be creative about who you ask, because you never know. I mean, your buddy who saw your band one time may be like, I could totally put tape on the walls for Attack of the Moon Zombies. That sounds like fun every Tuesday night in your basement. Woo! You never know. People are crazy. And it's the kind of thing that makes you excited to do the movie again. When you're like, oh, this is week 15, I'm so sick of this, a new person, yay, let's sing songs and have fun. It puts the energy back in to have people who are excited in.
Yes. And like I said, I can't reiterate this enough. Pay attention to your sound. Get good, consistent sound whenever you can. It will make your movie better, even if it's a terrible movie. It'll at least make it watchable. And sometimes, that's the best you can hope for. Okay, so I want to talk, now moving into finding people who want to act in your films.
Well, that's hard.
And I will talk to a couple of the actors here. What's your name again? This is Shannon.
Smack him hard.
Shannon, tell us about how you got into acting, and then what your first acting roles were. Go ahead. And speak up.
Yes.
They found me in a gutter.
Really?
Off the side of the street, they just picked me up, said, hey, get in front of the camera and say some stuff. I was in dance class since I could walk, and you just kind of got to be able to do, you got to be able to express through your face in dance. There's no words, it's just all about your face and your expressions, which is something that I have found. People forget their reactions when you're an actor. Yeah, you got to say the lines, but you also have to compute what that person said back to you. So I think that's where I got that. Then they needed dancers for high school musicals and whatnot, so then I started taking the theater classes through that, and then somehow fell into student film, and then found this guy on Craigslist, and just kind of went off from there.
And here's the funny thing. She came in to do her audition for her first thing. We had seen, I don't know how many girls before. We had one role of the film. We'd seen a bunch of people beforehand. And I was getting to the point where I was like, we're never going to find the person I want. She walked in the door and I was like, she's it. She smelled really good. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, but not too strongly.
It was just like, yeah, she just came in, she nailed it. It was exactly what we were looking for. And from that point forward. And sometimes that's how it is. I mean, it was before she even read the way she looked. I was like, that's she's got the look. If she can do the line, yeah. Or you can find actors by them stalking you on the internet. And then they become your good friend. Because if you say anything else, they will kill you.
That would be Sid.
We live in fear.
Hi, Sid.
Hi.
Hi, Chris. Love you back.
A shade of red. That's a joke.
The thing is, Sid is actually a very talented actor. I mean, if you see Attack of the Moon Zombies, which you all should,
right?
They're available over there.
It's my favorite.
Don't forget to
these two are amazing.
Always.
They really are.
They really
Sid
are.
Took a character that I wrote very, very kind of one note, and actually added nuance to it. I mean, real, tangible nuance.
He's so shocked.
I know.
Not at,
I know.
Not I don't at know her. It's at my writing. Someone took nuance and put it into my writing.
Yeah,
that was the shock.
I don't know why it would be surprising. When I stalked him, I sent him a downloaded photo of my high school theater trophy, and I said, proof I'm talented. So there were doubt should have been out the window.
Photographic
right
evidence.
There.
If you didn't forge it. Or find it at a thrift shop. Hey, look.
Yeah.
Best
my
actor.
Name with 19. As the year.
In the thrift store.
Yeah.
She only graduated like last year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He gives me all the old lady roles. Thank you so much.
You're pretty good.
Oh. Moving along.
Anyway,
so,
bus on the track.
To speak about Shannon, the first role you did was you auditioned in 2006. And ever since then, she's been in 4 of my 6 films. I like using a lot of the same actors. And that's another thing that goes toward making films, especially when you're very low budget and you don't have money to pay people. It works to find people who are both enthusiastic about the work, understand the limitations of what you're doing, but still want to be there anyway. And enthusiasm goes a long way.
So does masochism.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
And the ability to bake.
About. They had me chained up in the corner and wouldn't let me leave.
Well, but at the same time, she's getting something out of it too, because she has something she can show her family, her friends, people who will cast her in the future. I mean, theoretically, she could buy 100 copies of this and send it off to casting agents and say, hey, I hear you make this kind of movie. I can act in this kind of movie.
Look how awesome I am in
exactly.
this.
It's on the demo reel, and I got an IMDb credit.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, working with other people, especially when you're working with very, very low budgets, is be very upfront and honest with people about how much money you have and what you're going to give them.
Yes.
Because some people, some actors will come in and, you know, they want something and it's like, well, just be honest with me, I can't give what you want to you. And just, you know, even if they were perfect for the role, let them go. There are other fish in the sea.
Never, ever, 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 ever promise a paycheck to an actor unless that money is in the bank.
That's
true. Do not like to be used for a production and then 3 days into it, oh, we don't have any money. Oh, no.
Yeah. Sounds like you're speaking from painful experience, man.
Don't ever do that, please. You'll
get in so much lawyer trouble.
What? Yeah, exactly. Don't do that either, especially when there's a low budget, because they'll never, well, maybe you do, because they'll never see a dime.
Oh my God, Chris, you sound like the biggest ass.
You have promised to cut us in, though, when you make your first million.
When I make a million, I said I'd meet with every actor and give them their check for $150. And say, thank you so much. Sign this waiver.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 200. Sits here.
So we're all over at the booth trying to push them out the door.
Yeah.
Oh, now.
But so yeah, it's just, especially when working with low budgets, you just have to be very realistic. And that, again moves into another point that's very important when you're making low-budget films, is that be realistic in what you can do with what budget you have. I've seen a lot of independent films that, you know, the intention was awesome, but the final product is absolute crap because they were trying to do something they couldn't pull off, either for lack of talent or lack of money. And lack of money will be the one thing that kills you every time. If you want to make a, you know, Star Wars-esque epic and you only have $5,000, it's not going to get made.
Especially when you don't have a camera yet.
And yeah, exactly. When you're going to spend $3,000 on that camera. I mean, it's just, you got to be realistic about what you can pull off with what you have. And if you do that, you're going to make some good movies. And you can make good movies for very little. Just, again, you know, special effects cost money. Costumes cost money. You know, even masks and monsters and stuff, CGI, but, you know, effects, they cost money. And if you don't have it, you know, you're either going to have to figure out a creative way to get people to work for you for free.
Yeah. Something to be said here at this point is that there's no shame in starting small and learning from your mistakes. Chris did that. He didn't try to destroy the Empire State Building in his first film. He started very small.
He had a monster.
Let's see if we can make this. Let's see if we can make this and make it a good movie. And every movie since he's done that has gotten a little bit larger in scope. You know, let's see if we can do this now. Let's see if we can do that. So there's no shame. You don't have to come out of the gates and hit a grand slam home run. You just don't have to. You know, there's a lot of stories out there that can be told. You don't have to aim for the fences. Just try to get it over the infield line. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And not to say aim low, but
no.
Again, be realistic.
Feel realistic, you know.
And be able to self-edit that. Be able to be realistic with yourself.
Self-edit.
Yes.
Well, but you got to be able to be critical of your own work. You have to be able to be willing to take out pieces of your own work. You know, you have to be willing to self-edit at least a little bit and not sort of delude yourself into thinking. And this is what happens. Everyone I know who makes their first movie does this. They're like, I wrote a script. We're going to make it. The moment I release it, I'm going to get a call from Steven Spielberg, and I'm going to be sipping wine in a freaking hot tub within a month.
Hey, I thought that.
You all think that.
I really am.
You make that. Everyone gets that crazy idea, I'm going to Hollywood tomorrow. All I have to do is make my first movie.
Yeah, I thought we were the next Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't. The thing is that it's actually a lot of work.
It is.
All
you hear is people who took 6 and 12 years to make this movie, and you go to support it because you're their friend or because one of your actor friends is in it or whatever, and wow, that was great because they didn't spend the time to fart around and figure out what
their
the camera
sarcasm
does.
There.
Yeah.
In case it didn't translate well.
You can tell them things like, that was a lovely pair of shoes you wore.
You worked really hard at that, I can tell. But, you know, make a music video of your own, you know, with your friends and make sure you know how the camera works and how it sees the color red or how it's, you know, sees the color blue. See how it does in low light. You know, recreate something from Blair Witch because it's dark. Then recreate something from, I don't know, the Rock and Roll Show because it's bright. Walk around, see what it does, and then, you know, have someone, don't be offended to have someone with an opinion come in and say, you know, that would be much stronger if it had chocolate cake instead. And then you say, oh, maybe it would.
Maybe you're right.
Maybe you're right. Because
it's like George Lucas does not have that friend who needs to come in and say, leave it alone!
I know you all feel that way because there's a topic
do something
today
else
about that very same thing.
Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But, you know, that's the problem is that, you know, they get so in love with it and they work so hard on it. And man, they spend 10 years on this thing. They're not changing it. It's perfect. And really, it's a
and really it sucks.
Epic of...
Yeah. It's a big steaming pile of messy turd.
With, yeah, with five really great
language
things at the beginning where someone should have, like, cut it at that yeah point.
And just find people you can trust.
Find people you can trust.
That's Ruby for me, honestly. She's the only, like I said, I keep around, she's the only person that talks back.
Yeah.
I mean,
try to
except
be
Shannon. Yeah, don't get wrapped up in the vision. Yeah. Be realistic. We're good. And the one thing I can always, I think it's very important to tell filmmakers. I mean, I've been doing this for 6-7 years. I've made 6 features. You know, it's taken me this long to be, you know, the film guest at, you know, this convention. To me, this is awesome. This is what I want to do. Because I know realistically that what I'm making is a niche product that is a niche within a niche within a niche. I make black and white movies, for Christ's sake. Some people don't even like black and white movies.
But here's a dozen people from Fargo who are sitting in front of this little panel.
This is interesting. Yes.
Thank you, all of you who have never met before.
And no, we're not wrapping this up yet.
No. We got,
good night.
We got 20 minutes. Bench. No one comment, please, but we got at least 20 minutes.
Maybe there's somebody here from Moorhead.
Yeah. Oh, any Moorhead
I'm
people?
Sorry. Moorhead and Fargo? Okay.
Just Fargo. Just Fargo. Fargo's cool. But so,
it's a train wreck.
Thanks for having somewhere where people can approach
and leave. Thanks for asking questions. I appreciate that.
Well, that was a reason I stalked you. I had seen Cave Women on Mars, and I saw something approachable. And I just said, before I die, I have to have something to do with one of this guy's movies. And so by stalking, I just sent him an email. And but it just sounds more dramatic to say that.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. It sounds creepy.
I'm like a secret admirer.
You didn't read that email.
But I just said, I'll be a prop mistress, an extra, a dead body. I don't care. I just want to be part of this vision of his to keep this genre alive. It's kind of like classical music that, you know, nobody's going to write another Beethoven. You know, and it's just going to keep being redone. Well, he's writing new Beethoven for the B-movie genre. And yeah.
Which is a lot easier than writing new Beethoven.
Awesome. Right.
But so I guess a huge thing, a very, very important point is, again, is the idea of being realistic, not about just what you can accomplish, but about what you will define success as a filmmaker as, okay? Like I said, a lot of people get this idea that they're going to make one movie, they're going to go Hollywood, and they're going to be huge, and that doesn't happen, and they give up.
Except for the Clerks,
yeah,
guys.
Kevin Smith is the only one who's ever pulled that off.
Yeah. So you have to be realistic about what you define success as. If I make a movie and I make 1,000 DVDs and I sell 500 of them, is that success?
Yes.
Yes.
For me? Yeah, it is.
Because what Chris goes for is to pay himself back.
Yeah, if I can break even on what I'm doing, I'm a success. If I can come here and I can talk to you fine people and sell some stuff and have a good time over a weekend and meet new people, honestly, to me, that's success. Yes.
So, have you broken even yet?
Have I broken even yet?
$10 closer, Brent.
I've gotten to the point now where my earlier movies are paid off, so that when those ones are all paid for out of pocket. So I have paid those off. The newer ones, and I'll talk about this a little bit, is crowdfunding. They're funded by fans. So I've gotten to the point now, and this is why I do feel successful, is that I've got enough fans that are willing to give me $50
Thank
for a credit
all of you
in the movie, and allows me to make movies without having to shell out thousands of dollars out of pocket. So again, to me, that's success. It allows me to keep making movies, and that is my definition of success. If I can keep making movies and not, you know, have my kids be eating out of, you know, the car, if you know what I mean, living in the car.
Or the cup holder in the back seat.
Yeah, exactly. They do that anyway. But yeah, if I can just, they're at this point, they're self-sustainable. I'm not turning a profit by anyone's real stretch of anyone's imagination, especially now since I've incorporated and I'm actually paying attention to every expense. I am not turning a profit.
That he being says with a crack in his voice.
That being said,
not turning a profit.
That being said, they are self-sustainable. They are a really good time, and I'm having a really good time doing it. And like I said, I'm able to come out here and be a guest of honor at a convention, which to me, this is my crowd. You know, 10 years ago, I'm you guys going to conventions because I love conventions. I've gone to tons
of them.
And so I love, I purposely sort of have pursued the convention crowd because it's like people I feel like I get, you know? It's like, hey, instead of, you want to come over and we're going to discuss the merits of the new Star Trek movie? Come talk to me. But you might not like what I have to say because I'm a huge, you know, I'm a giant geek and I love it. I mean, and I do that with my movies. I throw that stuff in there because you're my people. You know, I feel comfortable in this crowd. And so that was, again, this is my definition of success. I know with what I'm doing that there's a very little chance I'm going to have the number one movie in some summer blockbuster.
What? That's what you promised me, Mim. That's what you promised me.
I thought you were going to make this, we were going to go to Sundance, and then after that it was all Beverly Hills and...
Okay,
we won first place for best horror feature at the Highway 61 Film Festival and the Roger Corman Award.
That's the best award I've ever gotten. I'm sorry. Corman is definitely one of my heroes. Yes, sir.
For best action horror.
If I were to break genre, which I probably won't because I know I'm good at this, so I'm just going to keep doing it. If I were, well... I would say a giant sci-fi epic, but that's not really breaking genre, is it?
No.
I think a really serious drama would be kind of cool. Something... And the funny thing is, I'm not the hugest horror fan when it comes to modern horror. I love modern sci-fi, don't get me wrong. I love comic book movies and all, you know. In fact, you guys see Captain America? I thought that was really good for what they did. I like that they put it back in the 40s. I thought that was great. I even like Thor, but I liked Thor comics when I was a kid. What? Yeah. And I, like I said, I like the Thor movie, but I was just surprised they actually made a decent movie out of the Thor comic, which I read as a kid, and there was like, how in the hell are they going to make a movie out of that anyone's going to want to see? It's so goofy. But they did a good job.
It was
decent. It was fun to watch.
Back to horror.
But as far as horror, I don't really like the super hardcore stuff. I just have never been a huge fan, but I love old monster movies, you know? I love old cheesy, you know, if it's a guy in a suit and you can see the seams, that's my favorite movie. You know, one of my all-time favorite movies is This Island Earth. God, I love that movie. It's bad. It's awful. And anyone out there in podcast land, I love it, but it's bad. It has the dumbest plot. I mean, it starts at one point. They go to this planet, and they're like, oh, crap, we failed. We'll drop you off, and I'm going to crash into the ocean.
Don't give it away. Can I ask you a question at this point?
Yes.
Relationally speaking, this planet Earth, or this island Earth,
yes.
Better or worse than Plan 9 from Outer Space?
It's a better movie. Plan 9 is its own special...
crap.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know,
said with love, with hearts around it.
The line when he says the thing about humans and their stupid minds. Yes. Stupid, stupid. I mean, it's one of the best, worst lines ever written.
Best, worst line ever.
He's still in our chair.
Hey. Yeah, we got
more.
I don't know. All-out space plant zombie attack.
That's yeah.
Go regulate. Go bust that guy in the head. He stole a chair.
But no, that, I'd probably try and make some sort of serious drama. I think it would be a good challenge for what... I don't know if I could pull it off, because like I said, everything I write comes off as over-the-top crap. Good crap, but I mean, it's very just like... I mean, what's your line in the big movie? In Attack of the Moon Zombies? Listen, give the line.
I'm asked, what the heck is going on here? And I just say, as far as I can tell, all-out space plant zombie attack.
You can't. That and that, to me, I was like, that is a good line.
I got through every
Hollywood.
Shot. I didn't track up, but I was pretty proud.
So Peter Jackson,
line.
If you're out there, the rights are available.
Look out.
Summerillion.
I would
right
be in your drama.
I would be in your drama.
Nah. Dramatic.
I'll take a crack at it. What the hell?
Meh.
I'm just kidding.
See how hard it is to get us to work
exactly.
For free. We're such idiots.
Yeah. So, so Chris,
yes.
We talked about the camera. We talked about the sound.
You did touch on the fact that, you know, it's good to have help. Because everybody here sounds like they're interested in filmmaking, at least peripherally. You know, maybe one day I'd like to make a film. You know, hopefully we're giving you some ideas on, you know, what things to look out for. But here's a question for you, and I think this kind of relates to what we're talking about. It's important to have help for the film, but for your very first film, how much help do you really want? Because, let me ask the question, because is it better for you to figure everything out on your own or have other people figure it out for you?
Well, and I think some of that depends on what you are comfortable with and what you want to do. Some people want to be, you know, the triple threat. I want to write, direct, and act.
Did I say despot?
I cannot act. I'm in my first movie. That was the last time I really wanted to be
in a
movie.
You don't see his face.
I am awful, and it was difficult. It's not who I am. So after that, I said to myself,
"Say anything, did you?"
Yeah, I have lines and everything.
Who was the gruff
I cannot
man?
Memorize my own words even. I wrote them.
His head was cut
They're
off.
They're tough. Believe
something
me.
About, hey, now's not the time for swimming.
I couldn't even say that line without laughing. Oh my God. There's like so many outtakes of me and the other actor just laughing our butts off. It's like, I have to turn around and say, hey, you know, time for swimming. And every time it's like, I can't do it. So I guess be realistic about what it is you want to be. If you want to direct, just be a director. If you don't want to do anything else, be confident, and that's okay to just be a director. I've met a lot of other people who are like, well, I act, but I want to direct too. And it's like, well, but you're a good actor. Do you really need to direct, at least this point? And if you do, then why aren't you doing it?
Right, find your focus.
Do it. You know, if you want to write scripts, go ahead, write one and finish one. Do it. What's taking you so long? You know what I mean? It's okay to just want to be an actor, because then you can pour your time and efforts into being a good actor or a good director. Me, it's all writing and directing. I like being able to direct my own films, but again, I'm making very specific genre films that are a very specific niche that I really haven't seen anyone else who's handed me a script and is like, I have this great idea, it's very much along the lines of what you're doing. But I think I'm okay at doing that. And that's what I want to do and what I want to be, but there have been very few times where I'm like, you know, I think I'm going to go try out for some other films as an actor, because I don't want to. No. I know I can, and I know it's not something I'm good at. Again, goes back to being realistic about who you are and where your talents and stuff lie, you know? And if you realize after trying to be a director that you're bad at it, maybe during that process you'll realize, I'm a very good editor. Maybe I should just be an editor. And there's no shame in that. Everyone who is involved in making a movie is important. I mean, you can't make a movie without actors unless you're using puppets and you do all the voices,
very exciting,
yeah,
really.
Which is my idea for the next one.
So, Chris, if I can pull this back on the road, after you've made a movie and written the movie and shot the movie, then how do you find places to show the movie? Who makes copies of the movie? How do you find conventions to go to and audience to see you and get a website? And how do you promote the movie?
And go.
And let people see
in
the movie.
30 words or fewer.
Yeah,
because,
right.
Yeah, because
30 words or less.
253, yeah. Go. If you guys want to stay, please stay, because there's nothing here, but we don't want to take up your time if you want to see other things.
Yeah, but we can talk for hours, believe us.
That's true.
Well, once you've made your movie, what do you do is really the question. What do you do? Well, again, this goes back to, I'm hoping you have thought out before you made this movie what you wanted to do with it. If you wanted to just hold a little party with your friends and you show your movie on the TV, great.
Awesome.
Maybe that's it. If instead, like me, you wanted to say, you know what, I'm making a feature-length movie, I'm going to show it in a dang theater. A lot of independent theaters will let you rent out their theaters for very cheap. I always premiere at this theater in Minneapolis called The Heights, which is the longest continuously running theater in Minneapolis.
Well, it's Columbia Heights.
Well, it's Columbia Heights, but it's like four blocks from Minneapolis, so their zip code says Minneapolis.
Still.
Yeah, you...
Metropolitan area.
Yes. And it's like this great old theater. It still has the Wurlitzer in it from the silent days when it was open.
Pipe organ on the ground.
And so we do this big thing where we have the Wurlitzer play, and then we introduce the movie.
Up.
People dress up. We do it as an old time
red carpet
premiere, red carpet thing.
Paparazzi.
You know, we do newsreels to get people in the mood. I show previews of old movies because I want people to realize what those old movies movies are like, just in case you don't know. Then we show the movie, and then afterwards we give out free cake. So if there's any reason you ever wanted to come to one of the premieres, for no other reason, the cake is good.
Oh, that's very good.
And it's free. 2-minute warning, good sir.
Yeah, Tony just said, go ahead, don't worry about it.
All right. If Tony comes over here, you answer.
So again, if you want to do a premiere, do it. People, obviously, family and friends want to go see themselves on the big screen. That's the point. So at least a lot of times, you know, plan to have a premiere if that's what you want. DVDs, figure out your distribution method. Do you want to just make it downloadable? Do you want to make DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever you want to do? But again, be realistic. If you made a 5-minute short film, maybe you don't want to spend $1,000, $1,500 getting DVDs made of a 5-minute film. Maybe you can do that on your computer, you know? Go buy a spindle of DVD-Rs and sell them that way. For me, I always liked having the retail-ready, fully packaged thing. Just because, again, it was like, I didn't want to make shorts. I wanted to make movies, you know? I'm going to make a feature. If I'm going to do it, I'm making a feature. And I want them to be nice, you know, press DVDs, you know, wrapped.
Paint on top.
It's got a barcode and everything, you know? For me, that's what I wanted. But you got to be sort of figure out what it is you want to do. And after you have the premiere, what do you do? Well, websites are a great thing to have. Everything I've done up to this point has been generally through the internet. The internet is like the greatest thing that ever happened to independent filmmakers. Because you can reach your audience. And again, I'm making niche things. I have to find people who get this. I have to find people who care. Because a lot of people sometimes they don't even get it. They're like, why isn't it in color? Why is that guy wearing a bucket on his head? I don't get it.
Is this an amateur movie?
Yeah, is this an amateur movie?
This is supposed to be funny.
Or what's
right?
A newsreel?
Yeah, what's a newsreel? I mean, come on.
That's okay too, but that's not his market. And you still have to bring people to the website. So how do you do that?
Facebook is great.
Woo!
Social media is very good, but do not rely on it completely. I see a lot of filmmakers do that, especially these days. They're just, I have a Facebook page, that's enough. It's not enough.
Nope.
Because not everybody is on Facebook.
Website.
Get a website if you have one. Find bulletin boards.
He makes
boards
websites,
forums,
by the
anything
way.
You
his
can find. God, I'm old school. I said bulletin board. That's like, it's a BBS for like, it's 1997.
He's older
stuff.
Than 30.
To get a website is so cheap nowadays. You don't even have to throw up the most fancy website. Just a cheap, quick page.
Nah,
just a splash.
Find,
and again, you can find someone who will design it for you.
Yes.
But if you want, like,
work out a little trade, you know.
Yeah, you can do blogs.
Blogs work too. You know, a lot of people just have a blog page, Blogspot or whatever.
WordPress, and, stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Free.
Well, and that's free. So.
And we just
and
convinced,
podcasts.
Yep, we just convinced Chris he didn't have business cards up until 6 months ago.
What?
We were like, you're an idiot. Get a business card.
Get business cards.
Oh my God. Because
I've gone
it's
through
got
a whole box
monster,
of his cards.
It's got the website. It's got everything. And they're cheap.
Because
I mean,
of Sid, I had to get 2,000 of them.
Yeah, but that costs you what? $5?
Well, that's the thing. They're a place like Vistaprint, $20 and you get, you know, 1,000 of them or something ridiculous.
They are deforesting the rainforest right
just
now.
For my stupid
business just to make cards for Chris.
And
but
also,
thanks
whoever
to Sid.
Ever you cast, make sure they have big mouths and like to promote.
Yeah, like
that's
I said,
half your job right
enthusiastic
there.
People are very important.
Well, and get your all your receipts, save your receipts, because at the end of the year, if you have enough, you can count it toward your taxes and all the other fun stuff too. Talk to an accounting professional who knows about artists and musicians, and they'll help you out. You can write off pens.
So basically, the best way to get the word about your stuff out there is figure out where you believe the audience for what you're making. If you're making hardcore horror films, there are a lot of horror
awesome.
Conventions out there. Get a dealer's table.
Man.
Meet people. Network. Find loudmouth, wonderful, excellent, lovely people who are going to give out your card for you. And then put them in the movie because
definitely do that.
That will give them a stake in it. You know,
yes.
All this stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum. You have to get out there. You have to shake hands. You have to meet people. You know, try and set up screenings. A lot of times you have film festivals that are just starting. If you have no money, a lot of times they're just looking, you know, we got 40 entries. We need to fill the time. Talk to them, network, meet these folks. It's very important more than anything else is really just to meet people, talk to them, figure out what they can do for you, what you can do for them, be available, help it out. You know, you play at a new film festival, you're doing them a favor, but they're also doing you a favor. Be cool about it, you know? no matter what you think, you are not, you know, George Lucas.
Nice. Yet.
Yet.
Don't not be yet. Diva.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to squash your dreams.
Diva.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Especially when you're working with very low budget stuff. You know, the divas, those types who think they're, you know, they're crap don't stink, don't work with them. Oh, they're not worth your time.
No. Just take yourself pseudo-seriously.
Pseudo-seriously. And just have fun. Ultimately, if you're not having fun making films, it's don't bother.
You're doing something wrong. At
yeah.
That point.
We if have you're a not lot having of time, fun doing something, you're just wasting your time.
We laugh a lot on the set. We're serious. We get things done, but we joke around. It's a fun time. You would look forward to being there. It's good times.
Well, and stuff like this, I mean, it's a good time to go hang out and meet people. And, I mean, we're away for the weekend,
chatting.
You know, having a good time, you know?
Visitor and Fargo.
Should we wrap this up, guys? I don't want to get yelled at.
Last question.
Any other questions?
Yes.
If you touch his headset, does he go after you like something about me?
Maybe. Let's try touching his headset.
Hey!
Well, I am a lighting designer. We should have someone audio touch it.
Should we go down the line here, Anthony? Say thanks.
Say thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
And say your name.
It's great being here in Fargo, and I've wandered through the town, checked some stuff out.
He visited your Fleet Farm.
Hello.
And the thrift store.
Fleet Farm is awesome.
Everywhere he goes, he's got to find one of those.
I would have gone to a thrift store with you.
Check out the table. I found that great light over there with Chris.
Yep.
That one, isn't that great?
Say your name, Anthony.
And I say
Anthony Kaser.
All right.
I'm Sid Corpy, Administrator Ripley's, signing off. Thank you for being here.
Shannon McDonough, it's nice to meet everybody. Thanks for having us.
I just met her like today.
You are the biggest liar.
I'm telling your wife you picked up a girl.
Exactly. Nice.
That's all right. I'll just put her in the next movie again. I'm Christopher Mim. I'm the guy that is behind the guy, behind the guy.
Behind the guy.
Behind the monster.
Who controls the
Rylan.
Guy.
Rylan.
I'm behind Chris right now.
That's Rylan.
Rylan Bachman.
He's support. I'm Ruby. I do lights.
Mark Hader. This will be, we're actually recording this. We're going to release this on Saint Euphoria. You have to spell the whole word Saint out. S-A-I-N-T. Shut up, dear.
It's been a long table. There's business cards.
There, yes. Come over to the Mimiverse booth. It'll be SaintEuphoria.com. All this will be up. You can listen to it and not recognize your laugh.
Podcast.
Maybe a month.
It'll be up before Thanksgiving.
Seriously?
Yes, sir.
That long?
All right, we'll get it to you fast.
We're trying to make a movie.
Podcast. I'm always bugging them. They do the podcast for me. I'm always bugging them. It's like, I want to release it on the 15th. Where is it? You've had 6 weeks to do
it. 15th-ish.
Yeah. 3 days to do it.
15th-ish.
They'll have it up by the end of the night.
Did I say desperate?
No, we will not.
You don't even have your laptop here.
You don't have to. You can do it as is. Lambent. Also.
And this is Mark Hader.
Yes, I'm
We're trying to get the word lambent to become the thing, all right?
Why?
We had a whole discussion about this word.
In our last podcast.
No. So let's do it. No one really knows what it means, and I think it's a dumb word.
Lambent.
So it's become this thing now. You
spell
use it,
it
just L-A-M-B-E-N-T.
It's
so
serendipitous.
Now it's
serendipitous.
And, no, actually, it doesn't mean that.
He wrote it on ours.
He was wrong.
He was wrong.
Go look it up and then use it all the time.
So now, whenever you get a chance, use it in, you know, it's like the word Smurf with the Smurfs. Wow, that was really lambent.
Really? All right, guys, let's wrap this up.
Here they come.
All right.
Here they come.
Thanks a lot, guys, for coming.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Fargo, for the great time. We made a lot of new friends, and we'll see you next year at ValleyCon 38.